So find your welcome sheet, please. If you were with us on Sunday, we had the psalm printed out on a green sheet. Today, the psalm is printed out on your welcome sheet, and we're going to be going through Psalm 13. And I want you to have it handy because I'm going to actually get you to read it in a little bit together. So I have a question for you, I want you to think about this. What do you find yourself whining about most these days? What do you find yourself whining about most, and who do you whine to the most? If you're going to complain about something, if you're prone to bellyache about something, what would it be right now? The weeds in your yard. For those of you who are married, I'd like to ask your spouse that question. Or for those of you that are good friends, it'd be interesting for me to ask one of your good friends that question and see what they how they would respond for you. So for me, I whine about vacuuming. And to my shame, and with the help of my wife, I've come to realize that in my privileged world, whining about vacuuming is quite inappropriate. My entitled and privileged whining has revealed my genuine conviction that a man, key word there, of my stature in the community, even though that's not a very significant stature, really shouldn't have to clean and vacuum his own house. And so I whine about it. I really do. I honestly don't know where this comes from because I've been vacuuming since I was a kid. Don't ask my mom about that later, but I have been. I had a hard childhood. I've recently discovered, however, that if I find a good podcast and I vacuum hard, we have a two-story house, I can actually break a sweat when I'm vacuuming. So it'll take me about 45 minutes to do the house. I can get my heart rate up, and I can get an education at the same time, and so I don't have quite as much to whine about. So what about you? What are you most tempted to whine about these days? Or what is your if maybe you're foolish enough to answer this, what's your spouse? What is your spouse most prone to whine about these days? Anybody want to give me an answer to that? Vacuuming, yeah. I guess the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Anybody else? Do you guys not whine about things? Being tired? Yeah, that's legit. So, you might ask, we'll get back to the whining in a minute, why are we exploring the Psalms this summer? They're so old and they're sometimes hard to understand, and they seem all over the map of the human experience. One psalm seems happy and joyful, the next psalm depicts the poet wrestling with some question about justice with God. The next song is a psalm of anguish or a prayer or intercession from some difficult place that the psalmist finds himself in. There's just a lot of variety in the psalms. And I would suggest to you that that's one of the reasons why we're taking time to explore the psalms, because the richness of that experience, once you get to know the psalms, provides an opportunity for you. It can give you words to speak to God in all of those different situations. So one of the ways to become friends with the Psalms is just to recognize that there's that diversity there, and as you get to know it, that can help you in your life of prayer. And so that brings us back to this idea of whining. Psalm 13, which is our psalm for the week, is not about whining. It's about heartfelt anguish, bewilderment, and pain. Have you ever found yourself in a situation where you were overwhelmed, not only with the situation, but even more so with the fact that God somehow seemed to be absent from you in that situation? Psalm 13 tells us of the experience of that kind of situation by an individual. So we're going to read it together. So who would like to read verses 1 and 2? Need a volunteer to read verses 1 and 2. Okay, Helena. And then who would like to read verses 3 and 4? I have to remember that she's here so I don't step on her. Verses 3 and 4. Who would like to read verses 3 and 4? Okay. And who would like to read verses 5 and 6?
I can.
Okay. Yeah, and it's right on your welcome sheet, Amanda. Yeah. So 1 and 2 is going to be Helena. 3 and 4 will be Levi, and 5 and 6 will be Amanda. And these are actually kind of theme divisions within the psalm. So nice and loud.
O Lord, how long will you forget me? Forever? How long will you look the other way? How long must I sit with anguish in my soul, with sorrow in my heart every day? How long will my enemy have the upper hand?
Turn and answer me, O Lord my God. Restore the sparkle to my eyes, or I will die. Don't let my enemies go astray, and you have defeated them. Don't let them rejoice at my downfall.
I trust in your unfailing love.
I
Yeah, so this is lament. And you need to know, surprisingly enough, there are 29 of these kinds of psalms in the Psalter. 29. Not 2, not 4, not 8. 29. It's a good chunk of the Psalter. And those don't include the penitential psalms. So I would suggest to you that this means that God invites you and I to share all of our life experience with Him, even when we feel like He's abandoned us. I think that's one of the reasons why there's so many of these psalms in the Scripture. So I would say that I don't often pray this way. I would actually say that I haven't actually prayed this way that often in my whole life. Like, if you listen to that first verse, he says, O Lord, how long will you forget me? Forever. It's raw. It's a bit unguarded. It's on the edge. How long will you look the other way? When's the last time you prayed that way sincerely to God? How long must I struggle with anguish in my soul? I think, to be fair, I've often been too scared to talk to God this way. I haven't trusted God enough to let it all hang out like this guy does, or maybe I haven't been desperate enough to actually express my angst to God the way the psalmist does. I've been reading this book by Pete Grieg, and he shares this story, and I just share it with you as an illustration of this kind of prayer. So as a fairly young dad, his wife Sammy was in the hospital, and she had a brain tumor, and they weren't sure whether or not she was going to live. And his friend Dan came to pray with him. And Dan started his prayer like this. He said, Lord, if this is your time to take Sammy home, Sammy is Pete Gregg's wife, would you please give Pete strength to bear the unbearable? So this guy prays for Pete Gregg. If you're going to take Pete's wife, Sammy, home, give Pete the strength to bear the unbearable. Pete jumps up. He says, no deal. No way, God. Over my dead body. This guy's a speaker. He's a prayer, international prayer leader. He's out of his chair pacing the room. If you're planning to take my wife from me, if you're planning to take a mom from her two little boys, well, you're going to have to fight for me. Fight her. Fight me for her. And his friend looked kind of nervous. And then he says, and you're going to have to find someone else to do your PR in the future, too. I resign. I quit. I'm not going around telling people you're good if you don't prove it to me now. Tears were streaming down his cheeks. God, I just don't care what your will is. Let me tell you what my will is. I want my wife to live. I want our boys to know their mom. And if her name is up there on some celestial planner, if she's destined to die of this thing, then what I want, what I need, is for you to sort it out. He was just howling out his pain to God. He writes, it was one of the most honest prayers I've ever prayed. For a while, I was embarrassed about the way I'd tried to pick a fight that night with God, ashamed that I hadn't been trusting enough. But then one day the Lord showed me very gently that in fact he had cherished my willingness to fight for Sammy's life because he loves her too. So So you could give a theologically correct answer to a friend in that situation, and you could say, no, God hasn't forgotten you, because the psalmist believes that God has turned his face away from him. In the situation that he's in, with what he's experiencing, he feels alone. And you have friends in that situation sometimes, or maybe you are, and it would be theologically correct maybe to say, oh no, God hasn't forgotten you. God's going to sort this all out. God is with you. Take a deep breath. This will all be okay. Which, of course, isn't accurate because it may not all be okay. Sammy could have died. But along with that, we need to recognize that in the intensity of that anguish situation, that person actually experiences God as being distant and unconnected and forgetful. And is crying out to God out of that situation. To them, in that situation, it feels like God has turned away. And they're being honest with God and expressing that to God. And here's the thing. It would seem that God welcomes that honesty. As you all know, I have a new granddaughter. She's here tonight. And it's fascinating for me to watch her. She can be smiling and all lit up with happiness one moment, and the next moment, everything has fallen apart, and she's yelling as if she's about to die. And for those of you that are moms, it's like, you know all about this. And dads, it's like, whoa, this is a pretty demanding little creature. And for those of you with older kids, the same thing happens. If you have a 7 or 8 or 9-year-old, they can get to the end of their rope where they really don't have the resources emotionally and mentally and physically to handle the situation that they're in. And they literally have a meltdown. It's like they're saying, I'm done. I'm really done. I'm out of resources to handle this situation. And so I'm going to just cry at the top of my lungs until this situation gets better. And that's all they can do. So what do emotionally and spiritually mature adults do when life gets out of hand and is beyond their capacity to manage? When you have a meltdown as an adult, who do you do that with? I think this psalm teaches us that God invites you to have your meltdowns with Him. To lay your pain and confusion at God's feet. Really. So the point of this, what I'm talking about here tonight, you may not be in this space right now. Some of you may be in this space right now. But is the point of tonight and the point of this psalm is for you to recognize that this is the kind of spirituality that you're invited into. It's raw. It's honest. And God is big enough that you can bring even, you can pour your heart out to Him honestly, even in those times of confusion and disorientation. And He's big enough to hear it. So you'll notice there's a progression in this psalm. The first couple of verses, it's just his complaint. How long, O God, will you forget me? Forever? How long will you look the other way? And then it turns to intercession. Turn and answer me, O Lord my God. Restore the sparkle to my eyes or I will die. He's actually thinking this. And the thought is here that this psalmist is probably dying. Maybe he's sick, has some kind of other ailment. That doesn't really matter. That's one of the things about the Psalms, is you can take your own life and death situation and feed it into the psalm. He says, restore the sparkle to my eyes or I will die. Don't let my enemies gloat, saying, we have defeated him. So he starts with this complaint. He moves to petition. And now he's actually trying to leverage God a little bit, I think. And in some of the other lament psalms that are longer, the psalmist actually isn't beyond manipulation, trying to bend God's arm by appealing to his reputation and his power. And God, how can you let this happen to your people? What are other people going to say about you, God, if this is what happens to your people? And then you'll notice in the last four lines, something happens. Somehow his faith is deepened or restored, and he says, "But I trust in your unfailing love. I will rejoice because you have rescued me." So how did this happen? How did he get from being deeply complaining and in a period of anguish, crying out to God, to a place where he's expressing love and trust to God again? How did that happen? It doesn't necessarily happen in all the Psalms. Some of the most raw laments, he doesn't actually come up again. But in most of them, the psalmist does. So this isn't the kind of religion, the kind of faith that has to have everything looking prim and proper on the outside. This is a different kind of faith and a different kind of God, where you can be honest, where you can... It embraces the difficulty of life and the struggle of life and our need of God. And it also embraces God's apparent absence at times and the fact that he doesn't seem to be hearing our prayers the way we want him to. And it brings our complaints and lays them at God's feet. So where does this find you tonight? Where does this find us as a community of people seeking to follow Jesus? Let me close with this thought. Jesus' spirituality was shaped by these psalms. So Jesus learned how to pray in part by reading these psalms. And on the cross, as he was giving himself for you and I to deliver us from the power of sin and evil and darkness, Jesus cried out to God from Psalm 22 and said, my God, why have you abandoned me? Almost the same cry as the psalmist in Psalm 13. My God, why have you abandoned me? And I think Jesus prayed that way because he was shocked. So from time before time, Jesus had anticipated what was going to happen on that cross. But when it actually happened to him and God turned his back on him, I think Jesus was shocked. And he genuinely cried out, my God, why have you forsaken me? Because Jesus had never experienced abandonment from God, and at that point, he did. You guys are all doing really well, by the way. So, let me just ask you this question. Rather than get into groups tonight, just because of everything that's going on, let me ask you this question. How might you include lament in your relationship with Jesus, your relationship with God? What might that look like for you? How might you include lament in your relationship with God? Or maybe it is, maybe the question is, how do you already include lament in your relationship with God? What does that look like for you? Anybody? Bit of a hard question on Wednesday night after you've had a full day. How might you include lament in your relationship with God? Anybody? Or do you? Okay, let's have a show of hands. For how many of you is this kind of prayer pretty foreign? Yeah, I think for quite a few of us. So then, I think a takeaway from tonight is when this happens to you, you may not be as surprised by it if you know that it's a real deal with God. I think, again, sometimes the only way you get here is to get to those kind of extenuating circumstances in your life where you pray viscerally from your heart because you're so desperate. This isn't like your normal morning prayer. This is a prayer from a person who's on the in a life and death situation. All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening so well. So we are going to take a few moments and just participate together in the Lord in the Lord's table. And let me just read this to you. On the night when he was betrayed, the Lord Jesus took some bread and gave thanks to God for it. Then he broke it in pieces and said, "This is my body which is given for you. Do this in remembrance of me." In the same way, he took the cup of wine after supper, saying, "This cup is the new covenant between God and his people, an agreement confirmed with my blood. Do this in remembrance of me as often as you drink it. For every time you eat this bread and drink this cup, you are announcing the Lord's death until he comes again." Let's just take a moment of silence, as much as you're able to do that, and just thank Jesus for giving himself for us. Maybe there's some things you need to confess to him. Maybe there's some things you want to say to him. Let's just take a moment and do that together in silence.